probably don't get up that early. It's a wonderful program. Most of the stories have some kind of Arctic or northern origin. Is that
close? Yeah.
Sort of a loose idea.
We started that way, and then we broadened out. But we've got a broad spectrum of stories, and we're looking for quality stories of all geographic areas.
And various people choose them for you, and you have Ellen Witcher, who was an earlier guest on the program, is also a regular reader, and I haven't been able to get in touch with Ellen, so I assume that she's out of town. I was daring and even called her at 6:30 in the morning today, so I assume she's gone. Anyway, we're going to play this story that Tom's done the reading for, and it was broadcast last Saturday morning, and any of you who know some children who like to be read to, I know all adults like it, but some children also do. Please call them up and tell them to join us for Barrington Bunny. I'm going to let Tom introduce it, and then we're going to have the story, and then we'll get back and discuss it. Okay, Tom?
Sure. About 15 years ago, I was at a retreat of the Episcopal Diocese Educational Committee, and about the only decent thing that came out of the whole bloody weekend was that we had one of the members there pass around a book that he had, which was called The Way of the Wolf by Martin Bell. And I read a story in there called Barrington Bunny, among others. And I know it touched me. So I read it to my children, and my children got to like the story. And we've kept it as a kind of a family tradition every Christmas Eve that we sit down together and read the story. So when I got into reading for Northern Storyteller, I thought, well, we have to have some sort of a Christmas tale, and what better one than Barrington Bunny? I should, however, mention that when I announced this to the family that I was going to do Barrington Bunny, that my 11-year-old daughter turned to me and said, Daddy, are you sure you want to do that? And I said, well, I think it's a nice story, and it'd be nice to share it with other people. And she said, yes, but Daddy, you always cry at the end. And I said, oh, don't worry, Emily, I'll steel myself. It'll be all right. Don't worry about a thing. The truth to tell is that we got in here recording, and it won't show on the tape, too, or we won't hear it on the tape, but when I got to the one part of the story where I knew I might be in trouble, I gritted my teeth, and all of a sudden tears were running down my eyes, and I look up in the control room, and there's Carla, and she's got tears going down her eyes, and Robert's behind her, and he's got tears in his eyes. So with no further ado, let's listen to the story.
Yes. Here we go.
Barrington Bunny. Once upon a time in a large forest, there lived a very furry bunny. He had one lop ear, a tiny black nose, and unusually shiny eyes. His name was Barrington. Barrington was not really a very handsome bunny. He was brown and speckled, and his ears didn't stand upright. But he could hop, and he was, as I have said, very furry. In a way, winter is fun for bunnies. After all, it gives them an opportunity to hop in the snow and then turn around to see where they have hopped. So in a way, winter was fun for Barrington. But in another way, winter made Barrington sad. For you see, winter marked the time when all of the animal families got together in their cozy homes to celebrate Christmas. He could hop, and he was very furry. But as far as Barrington knew, he was the only bunny in the forest. When Christmas Eve finally came, Barrington did not feel like going home all by himself. So he decided that he would hop for a while in the clearing in the center of the forest. Hop, hop, hippity-hop, Barrington made tracks in the fresh snow. Hop, hop, hippity-hop, then he cocked his head and looked back at the wonderful designs he had made. Bunnies, he thought to himself, can hop, and they are very warm, too, because of how furry they are. But Barrington didn't really know whether or not this was true of all bunnies, since he had never met another bunny. When it got too dark to see the tracks he was making, Barrington made up his mind to go home. On his way, however, he passed a large oak tree. High in the branches there was a great deal of excited chattering going on. Barrington looked up. It was a squirrel family. What a marvelous time they seemed to be having. Hello up there, called Barrington. Hello down there, came the reply. Having a Christmas party? Asked Barrington. Oh, yes, answered the squirrels. It's Christmas Eve. Everybody's having a Christmas party. May I come to your party? Said Barrington softly. Are you a squirrel? No. Well, what are you then? A bunny. A bunny? Yes. Well, how can you come to the party if you're a bunny? Bunnies can't climb trees. That's true, said Barrington thoughtfully. But I can hop, and I'm very furry and warm. Oh, we're sorry, called the squirrels. We don't know anything about hopping and being furry, but we do know that in order to come to our house, you have to be able to climb trees. Oh, well, said Barrington. Merry Christmas! Merry Christmas! Chattered the squirrels, and the unfortunate bunny hopped off toward his tiny house. It was beginning to snow when Barrington reached the river. Near the riverbank was a wonderfully constructed house of sticks and mud. Inside there was singing. It's the beavers, thought Barrington. Maybe they will let me come to their party. And so he knocked on the door.
Who's there? Called a voice.
Barrington Bunny, he replied. There was a long pause. And then a shiny beaver head broke the water.
Hello, Barrington, said the beaver.
May I come to your Christmas party? Asked Barrington. The beaver thought for a while, and then he said,
I suppose so. Do you know how to swim?
No, said Barrington, but I can hop, and I'm very furry and warm.
Sorry, said the beaver. I don't know anything about hopping and being furry, but I do know that in order to come to our house, you have to be able to swim.
Oh, well, Barrington muttered, his eyes filling with tears. I suppose that's true. Merry Christmas!
Merry Christmas, called the beaver.
And he disappeared beneath the surface of the water. Even being as furry as he was, Barrington was beginning to get cold, and the snow was falling so hard that his tiny bunny eyes could scarcely see what was ahead of him. He was almost home, however, when he heard the excited squeaking of field mice beneath the ground. It's a party, thought Barrington. And suddenly he blurted out through his tears, Hello, field mice! This is Barrington Bunny. May I come to your party? But the wind was howling so loudly, Barrington was sobbing so much that no one heard him. And when there was no response at all, Barrington just sat down in the snow and began to cry with all his might. Bunnies, he thought, aren't any good to anyone. What good is it to be furry and to be able to hop if you don't have any family on Christmas Eve? Barrington cried and cried, and when he stopped crying, he began to bite on his bunny's foot. But he did not move from where he was sitting in the snow. Suddenly, Barrington was aware that he was not alone. He looked up and strained his shiny eyes to see who was there. To his surprise, he saw a great silver wolf. The wolf was large and strong, and his eyes flashed fire. He was the most beautiful animal Barrington had ever seen. For a long time, the silver wolf didn't say anything at all. He just stood there and looked at Barrington with those terrible eyes. Then, slowly and deliberately, the wolf spoke. "Barrington," he asked in a gentle voice, "why are you sitting in the snow?"
"Because it's Christmas Eve," said Barrington, "and I don't have any family. And bunnies aren't any good to anyone."
"Bunnies are too good," said the wolf. "Bunnies can hop, and they are very warm."
"But what good is that?" Barrington sniffed.
"It is very good indeed," the wolf went on, "because it is a gift that bunnies are given, a free gift with no strings attached. And every gift that is given to anyone is given for a reason. Someday you will see why it is good to hop and to be warm and furry."
"But it's Christmas," moaned Barrington, "and I'm all alone, and I don't have any family at all."
"Of course you do," replied the great silver wolf. "All of the animals in the forest are your family." And then the wolf disappeared. He simply wasn't there. Barrington had only blinked his eyes, and when he looked, the wolf was gone.
"All of the animals in the forest are my family," thought Barrington.
"It's good to be a bunny. Bunnies can hop. That's a gift." And then he said it again. "A gift. A free gift." On into the night Barrington worked. First he found the best stick that he could, and that was difficult because of the snow. Then hop, hop, hippity hop to the beaver's house. He left the stick just outside the door, with a note on it that read, "Here is a good stick for your house. It is a gift, a free gift, no strings attached. Signed, a member of your family." "It's a good thing that I can hop," he thought, "because the snow is very deep." Then Barrington dug and dug. Soon he had gathered together enough dead leaves and grass to make the squirrel's nest warmer. Hop, hop, hippity hop. He laid the grass and leaves just under the large oak tree and attached this message: "A gift, a free gift, from a member of your family." It was late when Barrington finally started home. And what made things worse was that he knew a blizzard was beginning. Hop, hop, hippity hop. Soon, poor Barrington was lost. The wind howled furiously. It was very, very cold. "It certainly is cold," he said out loud. "It's a good thing I'm so furry. But if I don't find my way home pretty soon, even I might freeze."
Squeak, squeak.
And then he saw it. A baby field mouse lost in the snow. And the little mouse was crying.
"Hello, little mouse," Barrington called. "Don't cry, I'll be right there."
Hippity hop, and Barrington was beside the tiny mouse.
"I'm lost," sobbed the little fellow. "I'll never find my way home, and I know I'm going to freeze."
"Oh, you won't freeze," said Barrington. "I'm a bunny, and bunnies are very furry and warm. You stay right where you are, and I'll cover you up." Barrington lay on top of the little mouse and hugged him tight. The tiny fellow felt himself surrounded by warm fur. He cried for a while, but soon, snug and warm, he fell asleep. Barrington had only two thoughts that long, cold night. First, he thought, "It's good to be a bunny. Bunnies are very, very warm. And then, when he felt the heart of the tiny mouse beneath him beating, he thought, all the animals in the forest are my family. Next morning, the field mice found their little boy asleep in the snow, warm and snug beneath the furry carcass of a dead bunny. Their relief and excitement was so great that they didn't even think to question where the bunny had come from. And as for the beavers and the squirrels, they still wonder which member of their family left the little gifts for them that Christmas Eve. After the field mice had left, Barrington's frozen body simply lay in the snow. There was no sound except that of the howling wind, and no one anywhere in the forest noticed the great silver wolf who came to stand beside that brown lop-eared carcass. But the wolf did come, and he stood there without moving or saying a word. All Christmas Day, until it was night. And then he disappeared into the forest.
Thank you, Tom. That was a wonderful story. I think I'll just say a couple of words. When I heard that story the other day, I've been talking to people at the Women's Center, and I think this is a very difficult time of year for a lot of people. It's not possible to stop death, to stop unhappy situations, just because it's Christmas time, and there's a lot of pressure on all of us to have an extra special good time. And there's a sort of greeting card image of special intimacy and special warmth that all of us see, this sort of Rockwell image of a window we're looking through, excuse me, at a warm hearth, and there's a grandfather and a grandmother and the whole family. And I think it's hard at any time to have real constant human intimacy, and if it doesn't exist most of the year in some fairly reasonable form, I think it's real hard to conjure it up magically on the 15th of December, on the 20th of December. And for those of us who are dealing with sickness in our family, with unhappy work situations, with dying friends and relatives, it's especially difficult. And I really think it's important as a society to acknowledge that we always seem to have a little trouble with death. June hadn't heard the story before. What was your reaction?
Oh, dear. I suppose it mirrors my feelings, how important my friends are to me. Because all of us up here, or most of us anyway that I know, are so far away from family. Well, I don't know what we do without our friends.
That's right. I want our audience to join us. The number is 474-5044. To quote some other talk show hosts, is an open line. We will entertain any kind of discussion pertaining to Christmas and the season whatsoever. You can react to the story, talk about the traditions in your family, happy and sad, the kind of new ways that you might have evolved in celebrating Christmas in Fairbanks, because many of us, in fact, are very far from our families, and that kind of over the river and through the woods to grandmother's house we go. For some of us who were born in Alaska, which was not me, but for some people, that's a possibility. But the vast majority of us came from very far away, and it's not always possible to get home every year. Again, the number is 474-5044, and join in with whatever thoughts we have. Do you think that friendships are especially strong because of that isolation in this area?
Oh, I think so. I noticed that when I first got up to Alaska, how much more important friendships were, how much more I think people valued their friends and their neighbors, and how much more they were willing to do because of that. I'm going down to see my family. It'd be the first time we've all been together in 5 years, the first time any of my sisters or brother have met my husband. And I have mixed feelings about it. I mean, I'm real anxious to see my family again, but we have established a tradition up here in Fairbanks of two other families in our neighborhood with a progressive Christmas dinner, hors d'oeuvres at our house, main course at somebody else's, and we're going to go ahead with the hors d'oeuvres portion of it tomorrow, as a matter of fact. But although I will be happy to see my family, I'll also be thinking of my friends, too.
With us, Barrington has always been, as Tom said, a tradition, and we always sit together on Christmas Eve and read it, the four of us on the couch. And no matter how many times I've heard it, I still have tears in my eyes at the end, and usually sob quite loudly. It's interesting for me to watch Tom this time, because this is the first time that I heard it Saturday with him, so it's the second time that I've actually seen him hear it, because he always reads it. So it's always, for him, been an active thing, and this time he got to listen to it being read instead of reading it himself. We think it's important with our children, because Christmas, as you said before, is a time when everyone feels that they have to be joyous, they have to be ecstatic, they have to be jolly, otherwise they're going to be a Scrooge for some reason. And yet in Christmas, inherent in Christmas, there is a great deal of sadness that we perhaps choose to ignore because we're mass media blasted to ignore it. When you think about the Holy Family, for example, and the traditional Christmas story, there's a book called The Best Christmas Pageant Ever that I always read to my second grade class. And it's a story of some delinquent children who become involved in a church Christmas pageant. And what it gets across is that even in the traditional Christmas story, when you think of the Holy Family, there they were, away from everything they knew, in a strange place, without any friends, without any money, couldn't even afford a hotel room if there was one to be had, and there was a baby being born, and they were strangers. So and we talk, you know, you hear about the nice warm stable and the animals lowing and the star overhead. Fact is, it was a barn, right. And, you know, and the baby was in a manger. And the book describes it as the children looking upon it as some refugees standing about with their suitcases in a strange place and being all alone. And I think that with all of the Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer hype that goes on, that children do need to know that there is a very serious and very sad and a very melancholy part of Christmas that's important because it's part of life.
Well, and following up on that Christian imagery, I used to upset a lot of my friends for a number of years, and finally I just gave up trying to convince them that Christmas was not sleigh bells ringing, are you listening, but rather that it had no significance at all unless you linked it with Good Friday and Easter, and that the Christmas tide was perhaps a very hollow joy if you really got to thinking of what the religious significance of what was going on was.
Right. Easter follows fairly close mm-hmm. on. Birth, death are inextricably tied. Absolutely, and that's something that we forget. Solstice, which is right now on the eve of solstice, is a time that links birth and death together. And I think we're in a particularly... It's almost a hackneyed thing to say, except the fact that we all have to deal with it every day, and that is we are at a time when the light is standing still and we are in darkness. It may be a cliche, but I think it's difficult to deal with. I work in an office without windows. If for some reason I don't get out for that few minutes, hours of twilight, I feel like time's passing, and somehow I'm in the twilight zone. And so I think coming back from being out down south where I just was, that's really the hardest thing to face. And I don't think we can really say it too much. Our audience, I do encourage you to join us. Christmas is sharing, and we'd like you to share it with us, 474-5044.
Another thing I liked about, particularly about the Barrington Bunny story, is the wolf image and a different role of a wolf. The great silver wolf is not the wolf of Peter and the Wolf and the bared fangs and the vicious, very negative image that you see of the wolf. And the wolf coming in and telling this little bunny that all of the friends of the forest are your family and the whole oneness of Mother Nature.
It's a real mystical presence in the story. It's very simple language, but it for some reason has some real mystical sense.
I was afraid for a while there it was going to be a much shorter story and the wolf was simply going to eat the rabbit.
Oh, no. Not that wolf. We have some company. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, Patty.
Yes.
This is Sharla.
Hi, Sharla.
I heard you talk about solstice, and right before you talked about it, I was thinking about solstice, too, and the significance of that at this time of the year. And out of the Christian Christmas thing, into celebrating the end of the darkness, and that certainly plays a significant role for me, anyway, and some of my friends at this time of the year, in that as it plunges into the darkness and I want to sleep more like a bear, it's kind of this frantic activity then in a celebration at the end of that to kind of head us on for the new year. And that's sort of aside from Christmas, although we celebrate that too, but I've just been thinking about that a lot lately, just the darkness. And you mentioned that, so I'm just being redundant.
Yeah, and there is that ease, even though we sit still here for a couple of days, there is that sense like, well, okay, we've made it to the shortest. Here comes the sun. It may take a while to get here, but it is coming. We have also the added benefit of some real nice skies right now. Real, I say foggy, but it's not foggy. It's just sort of misty skies with a full moon.
Right, in the full last moon too. Yes. And last year, I don't know if anybody remembers, but over the Christmas vacation, it got very warm, just like now. Mm-hmm. And I remember one night, I think it was, I'm not sure if it was solstice, but there was an eclipse of the moon, and we were standing outside in front of our house with just our shirt sleeves on watching it. And as we watched it, the northern lights came out, and it was the first time in 10 years I've been here. I've seen them in color. I haven't been in Fairbanks that long, but anyway, it was a magnificent display, and it was as if it was trying to compete with the lunar eclipse. So there's just so much going on right now, I think, for everybody, even if you aren't Christian.
Right.
The other thing I wanted to say before I get off the line is happy birthday.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
This
nice
is
show.
Thank you. This is sort of a strange time to have a birthday. I think I actually, in the long run, have been able to make great hay out of it. You know, first it was for years, like, you know, so what, Mom, if you bring cupcakes to school? Everyone is so hyped because it's the last day of school and everyone's getting out of school and it's Christmas party. I'm just being run over. You know, no one really cares about my birthday. And so, of course, everybody would knock themselves out to make it a really special, special day, except that when I was my 16th birthday, which was an absolute disaster, they forgot it. I mean, they absolutely 100% forgot it all day. And I was convinced they were planning some kind of surprise extravaganza to be at some increasingly dramatic hour, like 10 o'clock at night, right? 11:59. So, I mean, after that, at least for the next 16 years, I really got double duty because they all felt so bad. All I had to do was raise my eyebrows. But now I'm at my last birthday, 39. This is it. That's Jack Benny. It was okay for him. It's okay for me. So be warned, everybody out there who gave me a present today, you don't have to do it anymore.
Just give the same thing.
I've been getting a lot of chocolate. Okay, we have another guest. Hello, you're on the air.
Thank you. This is Bill Schneider. It's nice to be be listening to the radio and have my friends come on. As I was listening to the bunny story and all, I got thinking about celebrations and how celebrations are such an important part of our lives and our basic needs. And poor old Bennington trying to celebrate, and that being such an important part of what we all wish to do at one time or another. That was just a thought.
Mm-hmm.
Bill, he also, he was a life net.
Mm-hmm. You bet, he sure was.
And he was also giving presents to people who didn't give presents back, which is something else that we miss a lot of times at Christmas. We have a Secret Santa thing at school. I think a lot of people have Secret Santa things. And I always enjoy getting people that I don't like, if I can. Because then it's easy to buy presents for people that you like, but it means much more to go out and search and hunt and buy presents for people that you don't like. And whoever was my Secret Santa this year, it's not to say that I don't like you. But
they don't know who you are.
So it's all right. But it just seems to mean more that way. And the idea of getting to give back is something that we've tried very hard to teach the children. And unless you show example and give just for the spirit of giving, that's a very difficult thing to teach someone.
Yeah, the Santa out at North Pole said the kids' letters tend to be very greedy. I mean, he has some really, of course, overwhelmingly heartwarming,
I've seen
choking up stories. But I think, in fairness to the children, there is so much frenetic, frantic hype,
mm-hmm.
Sort of characterized by this cabbage doll syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
And it struck me, having just come back to the States and reading all the cabbage doll stories in Time magazine and so on, that that's very metaphorical of what it's become. Here is this, the dolls are cuddly. I haven't seen one in person, but they're supposed to be cuddly. And one of their selling points is supposed to be that you are adopting them. And that is a real nice image, that you can get something from a cabbage patch and that everyone needs a home and needs love and so on, and that the things that you buy you should be responsible mm-hmm. for. There's a lot of good message there for children, and yet people are hitting each other over the head for these things
yes.
in the stores. And I,
so a woman,
you know, it's flabbergasting.
In Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, which is 10 miles away from where I grew up, a woman actually suffered a broken leg in a line in a store because people were trying to get the last of the few Cabbage Patch dolls for their children, and that's sort of a enigma.
Yeah, and in the story I read, well, one of the good things is that the store decided, rather than risk damage to the property of the store, that they would give them all the way to the children's hospital, which turned out nicely.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, it's sort of strange where we've gone.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel that in Fairbanks to any great extent. I think we're still small enough and not commercial enough to be spared a little bit of that. Again, audience, our number is 474-5044. Please call us with your family traditions and celebrations. I have a letter here from a listener named Diane Sparacino. I hope, Diana, that I have pronounced your name correctly. And one of the really nice things that she says is part of her celebration is that she decorates a live tree in the woods somewhere mm-hmm. around where she's going to be, and that it's a celebration. It's a chance to enjoy what's outside, and that it stays there, however it is. And I don't know what she uses to decorate, but maybe cranberries, maybe popcorn, so it could possibly be
mm-hmm.
some food. And I think that's a real nice tradition, and luckily we have some warmth here now, so we really, it's pleasant to be outside. Again, 474-5044. What special things do you do for Christmas? Have your traditions changed, Tom and Lillian, since you've come up here, from what they were?
I don't think so. That's some of those things you may want to, you make new traditions and new things, but we've had a lot of fun hunting for Christmas trees and decided that maybe we would use Christmas as a time to thin some of the trees around our yard. And last year, we ended up having to tie a couple of trees together to make one kind of decoratable tree.
My very first Christmas here, Sam had become quite ill. And he was just recovering from a fairly long stay in the hospital. And he's not really all that much into at least formalized celebrations of Christmas. We sometimes go to a local bar, and they have a very nice celebration on Christmas Day. But at any rate, I asked him, even in his weakened condition, if he'd go out and help me find a tree. So he went plowed out into the woods, and he's with all the stitches and so on. It's just really cold, like about 40 below, and this 4 winters ago. And he was not going to pick any tree that looked like it had a good chance if it stayed there, you know. So we came in with this absolutely mangled-looking, titchy little thing, and he kept saying, it's really nice. And, of course, I cried every day that year. It was just hard. Okay, we have another guest. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello. I was just calling in to tell about our Christmas tradition.
Please do share it with us.
I think it's really nice for people, especially starting a family. What we did when our children started coming along was we would get a special decoration for them each year and put their name on the bottom of it and date it.
Uh-huh.
And they're now 11 and 9, and our tree is quite interesting.
Uh-huh.
And we also pick one thing that happened to us as a family over the past year, and we get a decoration to symbolize that. When the kids leave, they're going to take their decorations with them, but the family decorations will stay. And every year when we decorate our tree, it's like, just remembering everything that's happened to us.
I agree. It's a real good time to take inventory, and I think everybody needs to take inventory, whether it's for good or bad.
The idea of the third decoration is wonderful because we've always done that as well. Each girl gets an ornament every year, and the little one said to me recently, Mom, when we grow up and get married, you and Dad won't have any ornaments left.
You'll have to start over again.
So we'll have to start using your third, if you don't mind my borrowing it, because it sounds like a lovely idea.
Well, that really means a lot, too. My folks ended up getting rid of their decorations because nobody goes to their house anymore. They end up going to my sister's house for Christmas, so they share her tree. And I have two German glass baskets that were on my mom's tree before I was born. They're the last two left. And these are really special to me because all the time I was growing up, I remember them. And it's just really nice that I'm going to be able to give my children some decorations that they'll remember while they were growing up and that their children will be able to see also.
Yeah, I think that's very nice. Continuity is really important. We have just been joined with a very dear friend of mine, and he's right on time. For him, Merritt Helfrich has joined us in the studio. We're talking about traditions at Christmas. Do you have any special ways of celebrating Christmas?
It's all very primitive.
Years of practicing.
Yes, I send my youngest daughter out into the woods to chop down a tree.
Uh-huh.
And then, of course, I have to carry it.
Yes.
And since the tree is generally about three times as big as my daughter and myself put together, it becomes a big event.
Uh-huh.
And
after the two-day tree trek, what happens then?
Then there's just a lot of being together and sharing joy in each other.
Low pressure.
Very much.
Do you do things a little differently now? Not now, as if this is a recent event, but than you did before you came to Fairbanks? Do you think tradition changed?
Well, yes, quite a bit. My father was a minister, and so Christmas was spent almost entirely inside the church one way or another. And with family from all over the place. And here I've developed another family amongst the people in the community. And so there's generally some sharing with those people, too.
Yeah, we were talking about... Actually, my traditions are really in transition now. This year, for the first time, I went outside and met with my family. I have two sisters and a mother. Before Christmas in a really sunny place. And I feel that's a better solution for me to this sort of winter situation. I got some respite from the cold and the dark, and we saw each other for a week with no cooking, no cleaning, no social obligations, no last-minute running to the stores. It was really freeing. We could just enjoy each other in some real sunshine. And now I'm really happy to be in Fairbanks with my my new family and new friends, and not having to travel at this time of year. Although I wish all of you who are about to take off and to be with your families, of course, much joy. And I that for me, I have missed only two Christmases with my family in 39 years. So for me, it's quite a departure. Except that I think that we should be willing to develop new traditions, and for some of us, they have some real positive side benefits.
But, Patty, one of the reasons I came to Alaska was to have a white Christmas.
Yes, that's actually true. Illinois, central Illinois, is often very bleak.
I grew up in a town where railroad trains ran through. There were four or five different railroad lines, and there were cement mills all around. And so we always had a gray Christmas.
A gray Christmas.
And it was sickening. Mm-hmm. I've not been disappointed here.
Well, there's another way to have Christmas, and that is where the poinsettias are in the yard and they're in full bloom, as are the bougainvillea and the oranges and the lemons and the...
There are some people who decorate cactus in Arizona.
Tumbleweed.
Yes.
That's true. We spent one Christmas in Western Africa in Sierra Leone, and my father brought in a palm tree, dug it up, brought in a palm... Well, it was a different kind of palm than a Hawaiian palm. I don't know, palms. I don't know that much about palm trees. I can't tell you what kind it was, but it was a palm tree, and we decorated it.
They're lilies.
They're lilies? Is that right?
I this may be entirely nonsense, but I recall that palm trees are lilies. Well, of course, that takes us into Easter.
We've been there.
We've been to Easter and back again, although there's nothing stopping us from going forward again. Okay, audience, 474-5044 if you want to get your revenge on us. If you want to call in, for instance, and say the palm trees are not lilies.
The one tradition that we've developed since we moved to Fairbanks is that on the Sunday before Christmas, we cram as many people as we can into our house for a party.
Indeed.
And we had it this last Sunday, and this year we crammed even more than usual. It never ceases to amaze us how many people that house can swallow up at one point and how much food they can consume. Mm-hmm. But I usually end up somehow with new food after the people have gone, that they've left. They ate the food that I had, but then everyone usually brings food, so I now have more food and I may have to have another party.
That is an advantage to having parties. And you know some amazing people that I had no idea.
That's very
interesting people. You have wonderful friends. And that is one thing that I find very interesting about holiday season, so you can go to some big parties and you discover that very good friends of yours know other people that you know quite well that you had no idea they knew.
And you see people that you haven't seen all year, which is one of the reasons that we have our parties, because sometimes we only see people once a year.
I know.
Is that by choice?
Hello out there.
Anyone who's at the party, please just disregard that last remark.
That haven't seen the house for a year. Yeah. It was not intended, no.
Would love to have any of the chickens that were on the air last week call in, too.
You haven't gotten your Christmas goose and you're looking for it? Or turkey?
Yeah, I really failed on that. I was supposed to call someone about finding a goose if I could find someone to pluck it. We would also entertain calls if anyone has any special things that they eat at Christmas time. 474-5044. What are you planning on eating, Merritt?
Swedish meatballs.
Swedish meatballs. Mm. Is that your traditional Christmas?
Yes. Somehow I never get around to making them, but I've always considered
you always
part
put
of the
it
tradition.
On.
Yeah. I'm still wrapping presents until 4 o'clock in the morning.
And putting dollhouses and bikes together.
I've never actually had that experience. But
is that right?
Yeah.
How have you been a parent all these years without that?
Well, perhaps I'm not a parent.
Well, you are a parent. You're a very good parent.
Oh, I'm here, though.
You only choose gifts based on whether they're pre-assembled or not.
Or you just give somebody a sheet of plywood and some 2x4s and allow them to...
This is a do-it-yourself.
We don't do turkey on Christmas or ham. We do turkey at Thanksgiving. And recently, the girls have decided that lobster and crab and filet mignon is what they like.
Excellent.
On Christmas. So on Christmas, that we indulge. So if there are any young men contemplating dating my daughters, you need to know that. Are not going to be ever happy with a hamburger at McDonald's.
That's a wretched excess.
But once a year.
Once a year. This is a celebration. It's true. I mean, you really shouldn't, if you hate turkey.
Oh,
now,
I love
excuse
turkey.
Me, poultry lovers out there, we know that there are a lot of you, but...
I love turkey, but I like lobster better than I like turkey.
But you wouldn't consider a cheeseburger for Christmas?
No.
No.
No, no. Not unless it was red and green.
No. No, you aren't serious. A red and green cheeseburger. McDonald's will have it packaged and
given them their next promotional idea.
Right, I know it. It's here.
We'll start out with my mother's pecan rolls, and after that, I really don't care.
I see. I think I could
make all Christmas Day just hit me the pecan rolls. We are going to take down an enormous king, and I think my sister will bring one of her turkeys, so I don't know which is going to be consumed when. We're having a load of people to feed, so maybe both.
I haven't made up my mind. I only have one eating kind of thing that I care about, and that is a Swedish kind of dough thing called kringla. Mm. And you make it with sour cream and flour, and it's not very sweet, and it's a sort of clover leaf. Well, it's a kind of ring shape, and you make the dough the night before, and then you bake them, and you serve them with hot butter, and they're wonderful.
I heard part of the show and heard someone call and say they had a special tradition with decorations on the tree.
Mm-hmm.
I've always had a star representing the Star of Bethlehem for the top of the tree. And have you ever done anything like that? Have you ever had any special decorations?
Oh, absolutely. We had we have hundreds of decorations. Actually, we've expanded to the point where we need 20-foot trees. It's really ridiculous. The tree, my mother keeps saying next year it's not going to happen, and of course it always does happen because all the decorations have. Everywhere we travel, all around the world, we buy decorations and send them home, and we're really sort of compulsive about Christmas, actually. And wonderful decorations, and I agree with the woman who called. We have each one of those decorations, even when I can't remember what year it comes from, when you handle it and put it on the tree, it brings back all kinds of memories of Christmas past. Was talking to Scott a little earlier, and he was saying that he gets very emotional singing Christmas carols and so on, and I went to the university carol sing and concert the other day. It was Thursday noon, put on by the music department, and everyone rose and sang Joy to the World, and I found myself crying, and I don't do that, but I think it's just the emotional quality, the sort of pageantry that comes back from just years and years of being in that situation. And I mean, I really can't explain it. It's just I felt really touched by the whole experience, and I think Barrington Bunny, as an example, is very much like that. And storytelling, we haven't really said very much about Northern Storyteller. I really would like to talk a few minutes about it. I think that's one of the services that public radio performs, and that is, I believe in reading. I think as adults, we take great comfort from people reading to us. I know that when I have a couple times in my life been quite ill, I've very much enjoyed people reading to me. I think children really profit from it, and it seems from the KUAC schedule for this week, there's quite a bit of reading going on, and there's some really traditional stories, and obviously people form their own tradition, their own stories, Barrington Bunny being one of them, which is not the sort of classic, 'Twas the Night Before Christmas. I talked to Mary Beth Smetzer this week, and she talked about a group of friends of their family that all get together, and they always do readings around the Christmas tradition. And I think your show is wonderful, despite the fact that I didn't seem to know what time it was. I do get up very early on Saturday because it's hard for me to sleep in when I've been getting up all week. And I do listen to you and also Sparky.
Big John and Sparky.
Big John and Sparky. I just love Sparky, even though I don't have children. And I think storytelling is really a wonderful thing, and I encourage our listening audience to listen to Northern Storyteller. We have a caller, which I'm going to put on right now. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello. Got another comment about your decorations.
Yes.
What we do with our kids after we get the decorations up, we like to sit on the couch in front of the tree, and someone starts it off, and we call it I See Something. And you say, I see something that's red and green and black and silver. And whoever guesses which decoration you're talking about, they get the choice. Then they pick one,
uh-huh.
List all the colors on it, and whoever guesses that gets to pick the next one, and so on. I mean, you can get great, name all the colors on the lights, and they got to guess the string of lights. That's what you're talking about. And the kids, that's one of the things they can hardly stand waiting for, is once you get the tree decorated, they want to play I See Something.
Right. You get a really good close look at the tree that way.
Yeah. Sometimes it's hard to see the colors when you don't have a white light on the tree. It's
that's right.
It's dark with all the colored lights on. And now you can pick up little teeny colors, like maybe just the eye is black.
Uh-huh.
And so you can add that color in there, and that really throws him up, and it's a snowman. He's got a little green scarf on or something. Anyway, that's one of the exciting things that they like, with playing with the tree. And plus, if you're all sitting on the couch, arm in arm, you know, snuggled in a pile, and everybody's trying to outguess each other. And it makes for just a quiet time together.
How old are your children?
Let me see, 6 now and 13.
Huh. And you've been doing it for a lot of years.
Oh, yeah, well, I did it when I was little.
Right.
So, yeah, it's been going on for quite a while. But it's something that they enjoy, and it's just simple and quiet. So maybe somebody could try that with their kids if they have some time.
It's a neat idea.
I think sometimes if a lot of us take a look and just do the things that we want to do during this holiday season and not the things that we feel compelled to do or that seems that we should do, you cannot accept all the invitations or go to all the concerts or, I don't know, there's just a real smorgasbord, and sometimes our eyes are bigger than our stomachs. And I think we would all do well to sort of slow down and really talk with our families. If we're alone, just really decide what we want to do. There's no one way to be at Christmas, no one way to celebrate it. I think that's partly the message of Barrington Bunny, is that Christmas is what you make of it. And I really would urge all of you who maybe are not, those of you who are not having a really fine time out there this season, to not at least add guilt and stress to it, and understand that next year may be better and that it's all right to feel bad. Back to Northern Storyteller a little bit. How long have you been doing the program?
Sometime last spring is when we started, wasn't it, June?
Well, actually, I think we started talking about the program a year before it actually got on the air. And we were looking at it not only from the radio program, but also a bibliography of Children's Alaskana. The program, though, has been on since, I think, September.
Mm-hmm. It's been the fall.
Mm-hmm. And you both enjoy doing it, obviously.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
And enjoy, and I know Ellen enjoys it also. And you, I think, have a growing audience. Do you get letters, suggestions for stories?
I got a fan letter, yeah.
Isn't that thrill?
A real groupie out there.
We have a caller. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello, is this Patty Costello?
Yes, this is.
Patty?
Yes.
Yes, hello. This is Bobby Bruno Moore.
Oh,
and I'm calling
Bobby.
From New York.
Yes, you are.
Hello, and I wish I could be there for your radio show. This is the first one that I've ever missed, and we wanted to send our greetings to you, holiday greetings from New York. I also have some other people here with me.
Hello, Patty. This is Leonard
from
New York.
Oh, Lenny. Hello. This
How
is
are
like
you?
This is your life. Lenny, Merry Christmas. How's Grandma?
Grandma is just wonderful. New York is wonderful, and the city misses you, Patty.
Oh, I bet. What a hole.
We've got to get you back here.
Well, I'd like to come back there. It's difficult. I haven't managed since I moved out of New York City. I haven't managed to get back. So you're having a wonderful time, all of your wonderful Italian family, yes?
Yes, we certainly are. We have another person that wants to say hello here.
Good, I hope so.
Good evening, Patty. This is Terry Moore.
Hello, Terry. Are you having a wonderful time?
I send you greetings.
Thank you.
Far south.
I send all of you Merry Christmas greetings. Are you having worse weather than we are? It's very nice up here. It's very, very nice.
That wants to say hello.
Okay.
Hi, Patty. This is Mama Bruno.
Oh, hi, Mama Bruno.
Merry Christmas. From Yonkers, New York.
Well, very Merry Christmas to Yonkers, New York.
Oh, thank you. Yes, we're having the last of type weather.
Are you?
Yeah.
We're having really cold. Is it cold there?
Oh, and I want to say hello to you. And a Merry Christmas to your listening audience in Alaska.
Well, thank you very
much. Merry Christmas, Alaska.
Merry Christmas, Yonkers.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, Patty, we all wanted to call and wish everyone a Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. And to you, we know that today is your birthday. So happy birthday.
Thank you very much. Well, listening audience, now we've had a wonderful Christmas wish from Yonkers, New York, that capital of the world.
Happy birthday to you.
Well, this is Chuck Aurora giving you a blow-by-blow description of the sudden eruption of birthday celebration that has erupted here at KUAC Studios. Patty Gustilic wearing a green blouse and looking quite aghast. I've only seen this expression on certain felons and absolute flabbergasted individuals.
Oh, my God.
He is grabbing some liquid, and there are two cakes on the table, and everybody is clustering around. I've never seen anything like this. Some sparkling cider is being quaffed right now with a certain abandon. You can't imagine the sartorial splendor that is going on right here at our studios. Sunglasses and coffee mugs are being hastily poured into, and applause is erupting. Patty has a grin on her face the size of Panama Canal. And we have Scott Sterling in the studio there. You remember Scott from his ill-fated Alaskan Legislative Review. We might be able to get him back. And there's Pat Monahan in there. And of course, Tom Hassler and Susan McGinnis. There's a whole slew of people as they are passing around glasses and generally making absolute idiots of themselves. Certain wild gestures are being demonstrated by certain members.
Hi, I'm going to put you on hold.
I can't simply describe the mayhem that has erupted here. People are drinking from bottles.
I see the collar. Just
and looking like they should.
Hello, you're on the air. Hello, I'm speechless. This does not happen very often. Hello?
Hello. This is
Wendy. No! This is your life. Oh, God. Wendy!
How does it feel to leave your youth behind?
I don't know. I have no idea. I feel really childish. I'm not. Scott said earlier today, he says, you give us all hope, you never have to grow up. Look at you. You're a sterling example. I think I got
well,
over.
Happy birthday.
Well, thank you very much. I wish you were here with us. We really miss you.
I wish I were there too. Do you know we don't even have snow here? I've never had a Christmas without snow.
Is it cold?
Cold. It is very cold, but.
Well, that's half. It's warm here. It's warm here. We do have snow. It looks like it's going to be wonderful, and I understand somewhere in Montana it's 72 below with wind chill factor.
Does everyone know where Wendy's calling from?
Wendy is calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Oh, and I wish she was here.
It's wonderful to hear your voice. I understand you had a chicken program on last week.
I had the chicken last week, and this week I have the sheep. It's wonderful. It's wonderful.
Is this a sign that this program is beginning to deteriorate, or what?
I think it started the very first program was the beginning
of
the deterioration.
Yes.
I know I have 12 in the studio with me. We've run out of mics. I thank my indulging audience. I hope this hasn't been too personal for all of them. It's been wonderful for me. I thank the people who listen to Home Fires Radio Show. This program has the potential of being what you want it to be, so call and criticize if you'd like, if it's getting too self-indulgent. And if you'd like to be on, I'd welcome all of you. So thank you.
Goodbye,
to the Patty Gustilic audience and to Wendy Redmond, we dedicate the following song.
We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Good tidings we bring to you and your kin. We wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
18 different keys at once.
A chorus we ain't. Merry Christmas,
bye-bye.
Everyone.
Happy
Merry Christmas,
birthday.
Wendy.
Yeah, say hello to everyone for me.
We will. Thank you, dear audience.
You've been listening to the Christmas edition of a Home Fires radio show brought to you live from the KUAC studios. This is Stereo 105, KUAC-FM in Fairbanks, public radio from the University of Alaska.
This is Robert Conrad at Severance Hall in Cleveland, from where we are about to bring you another broadcast concert by the Cleveland Orchestra. This program, the annual Christmas Festival Concert of the Orchestra, will be under the baton of Assistant Conductor and Director of Choruses, Robert Page. Assisting will be the Cleveland Orchestra Chorus and the Cleveland Orchestra Children's Chorus. On the first part of the program, we'll hear Arthur Harris's arrangement of We Wish You a Merry Christmas and Angels We Have Heard on High. I Saw Three Ships, What Child Is This, 'Twas the Night Before Christmas, and Dances of the Sugar Plum Fairy from The Nutcracker by Tchaikovsky. In addition to conducting, Mr. Page will also act as narrator. The audience is greeting Robert Page as he comes on stage here at Severance Hall to begin this Cleveland Orchestra Christmas concert.
You a Merry Christmas. We have songs and carols that are old and new, but probably none is beautiful or more refreshing than Angels We Have Heard on High.